Fran.
Man, it's another week. It's another fabulous week here at Case Files with Kat.
And Ashley.
What?
It was good to see you in real life for the first time
in 20
years.
Oh my gosh, I know.
We're not currently together, if people are wondering. Like, we just saw each other in real life.
It's been how many months?
A long time. I feel like 20 years.
Since March?
I think it's been longer than that.
No, we saw each other. We had to have seen each other in March.
Okay.
To do a show in person? Before
I don't remember when we last did.
Lockdown, on the whole lockdown situation. Well, how has your week been since last we met?
My week has been great. I have just been staying busy with work. I haven't had any major crises happen. Nothing new and crazy in 2020 has happened yet this week that I know of. At least in my world.
No, you got some good news though. Some good work news, and that's awesome.
Oh,
celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Woo. We're going to celebrate you. What? Have a drink.
I did. I am drinking a beer, so that's great.
Well, that's a good segue into that. What are you drinking?
I am drinking the tried and true Carboctoberfest seasonal Bavarian style German beer because it's very seasonal and I love it. And so I'm cherishing it while it's here. If you haven't listened to other episodes where I've talked about it, it is a very good Oktoberfest beer by Carbach, which is in Houston. It's just a really good balance of flavors.
What makes it an Oktoberfest beer?
Your guess is as good as
mine. Okay,
all
right.
I
should know that.
Like,
I should know that.
Beer snobs are probably going to attack us, but I feel like it's the malts that they use and the brewing process. Because, like, I just feel like that's what it is.
I know. I just don't know. Well, you know.
It's a very good beer, whatever it is.
I've mentioned the trip to Germany before, so I should actually know why it is an Oktoberfest beer. But I don't remember that. It's because of the beer. So I'm going to.
It is a dark-colored lager. That slowly fermented throughout the summer months to allow rich malt flavors to develop before Oktoberfest arrives.
Whoa, you just
spoke
really quickly. I didn't hear that. You read quickly.
It is a dark-colored lager that is slowly fermented throughout the summer months to allow rich malt flavors to develop so that it can be served during Oktoberfest.
Interesting.
Which is why it's seasonal. So there we go. Now everyone knows.
Did you know Oktoberfest happens in September? Oh, right.
I did know that. It is brewed to a higher gravity.
What does that mean? I don't know. I don't know anything about
this. Is a higher alcohol content. Oh. I didn't know there was such thing as that, but there you go.
They should start putting that on cans. It has this much gravity.
So people like us can just totally fuck it up when we talk about it.
We don't know what that is.
Listen, I just know what beers taste good and which ones don't taste good.
Word.
And I just tell you the ones that I think taste good. I can't tell you why they're made the way they're made or how much gravity is involved in me.
I got Sarah Bareilles' song Gravity in my head now. Okay. It's a good song. It's a good song. Anyway.
Well, normally you're drinking vodka lately, so I just assumed that's what you were on.
I know. What? Because... not going you know, one beer is really just anyway.
Oh,
but I did go to the Hebes. HEB had our buddies over at Saloon Door, their double IPA. Say When. It's delicious, you know, and actually it's had been since such a long time since I'd had this. 9.5% alcohol by volume, but there's this it's got this like kind of a nutty flavor, and it went from like nutty to chocolate. And it was like that first time I was like, man, it's got this kind of, it's not a normal flavor for me to have in an IPA. So it had a smoother taste to it. I'm used to a little bit more like citrus or those hazes that are just super citrusy. But this one, I was like, oh my goodness,
Slender actually put out a pumpkin spice Oktoberfest, which in theory sounds disgusting. But I tried it, and it actually was super amazing. I don't know if it's just like a limited thing or if they even still have it, but it was really good.
I think my question of the week should be like pumpkin spice.
Most people will say no, but they secretly drink it.
I totally don't get it.
I don't like pumpkin spice coffee. I just don't like the flavors of it. But I'm telling you, this beer was really good at Slendor.
I have a rotting pumpkin on my front doorstep that Jason refuses to take to the trash. Anyway, how about we go to question of the week?
Okay. Are you going to ask it or shall I?
We'll do that first. Yeah, you ask me because I don't know your question of the week. Okay, go.
Awesome.
I don't know it. I know it. Like, I know what my podcast name is, but I don't remember what the
last text that you sent. And your birth month.
Oh, Lord. Okay. It's not very good.
Okay. Well, what is it? Are you going to share with us? Or we're just supposed to guess?
I don't know. I'm wondering if I should. It's really dark. Okay. There was a woman shot by her husband in Texas City today around noon. Word on the street is that this is her. October.
October is history's best kept secret. So.
Word on the street is that this is her best kept secret.
That's a really long time. history's best That's kept a really secret, long but good title. Enough. Like, we're not going to nitpick, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a really dark. I just sent that.
There was a lady who was shot by her husband in Texas City today. History's best kept secret would have been your full podcast name. Sounds like an excellent second choice next to Case Files.
That was. I know.
Mine is okay. Haha. Unpacking the truth.
That's perfect. We're rebranding.
Done.
That's it. We're rebranding. I know you worked so hard.
I did.
On that logo, but we are switching it. Haha. Okay.
Unpacking the truth.
Oh my god, I'm just getting such a kick out of that. I love it. Okay. So let's move on, shall we? Everyone's sick of listening to us now. If you're just tuning in, we're going to talk about. I'm going to first give you a little quiz.
You're giving me a quiz,
but it's going to be a little quiz. I'm giving you a little quiz. You sprung that on me. I'm going to spring it on you. You're going to know all the answers. Okay, but let's talk about exorcisms.
I know nothing.
Why not? We're a little true and false. About exorcisms. All right. So true or false? There are two different forms of exorcism, major and minor.
True.
Very good. It's like in music, majors and minors, right? Major exorcisms are performed on those who are determined by thorough investigation to be demonically possessed. They are performed by a bishop or by a priest who has been given permission by the bishop. Lots of layers. According to the USCCB, minor exorcisms are prayers used to break the influence of evil and sin in a person's life, whether as a catechumen preparing for the baptism or as one of the baptized faithful striving to overcome the influence of evil and sin in his or her life. True or false? If you receive an exorcism, your head will spin 360 degrees.
I want to say true, but I'm assuming it's false.
It's false. I told you you know all the answers. No, it will not. So this is from St. Barnabas Catholic Church in Arden, North Carolina. And I just think they're really funny about their answers. No, it will not. That is Hollywood invention! Exclamation point. There are times, however, that the devil is given permission by God. I'm not sure how that works. To bend the rules of nature, but never to break them. True or false? You can't be possessed against your will.
Wouldn't everyone just be like, I don't want to be possessed? True. I don't understand. Which kind of... I don't understand.
Right. I don't want to be possessed. Word. Exactamundo. Nobody wakes up one morning and says, I think this is a quote from, this is why I say that they are so funny. Nobody wakes up one morning and says, I think today's the day I will be possessed. However, no. However, by involvement in particular sins like pornography, drugs, the occult, witchcraft, Ouija boards, we open avenues that allow the devil to enter us and do great harm.
That makes sense.
I have opened many avenues.
It's very disappointing.
I'm just saying. I have done it. So I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm just not going to do it anymore. Okay. Bleep, blop, bloop, blop. That is why it's important to avoid such things and keep those and keep close to the sacraments. All right. True or false? The devil will stay away if I frequent the sacraments and pray. False. The sacraments provide us with the necessary grace to do the will of God. They are not a demon repellent. Yeah. I love that. I'm sorry. They're really funny. True or false? Holy people get pushed around by the devil.
I just have this funny image in my head. I guess true. I don't know. I just get this really funny image when I'm thinking about it. Like, sorry. True? Like, I don't know.
True. This is a true statement, and it includes you in bold. The more you seek God's holy will, the harder it will be the devil to derail you. There you go. In fact, there are many saints, Padre Pio, for one, who kind of has something to do with the story I'm about to talk about. Padre Pio, for one, who battled demons on a regular basis. If you do not know who Padre Pio is, I learned about him during my investigation. He was a very religious man, who he was a saint in him, who bled
the hole in his hands,
the wounds that Jesus had
all the time.
Yeah, he would bleed the same all for years. They could never he could never not be stigmated, right? Like, he could never not have this. And he was, ever since he was like a little boy, if somebody like cussed in the same room as him, and he'd go like running from the house. Like, he like, he was a very, very religious man. Even as a child, very interesting fella. Had never heard of him before, but he ties into the story, and I'll get to that later. I might forget about it, but I'll get to that later. All right, so true or false, possession and temptation are the only ways Satan is able to afflict us. That's false. Temptation is obvious, but the devil has other ways to drag us down. we all know. I just said them all. Pornography, drugs, occult, witchcraft, Ouija boards. A lot of you are going to hell. Okay, so true or false, Mary crushes the head of the serpent.
I don't even know what we're talking about, so... True?
Yep. I don't know. It's true. The Most Holy Rosary is the strongest weapon we have against the temptations and the ills of the devil. So there you go. There you have it, folks. That's from St. Barnabas Catholic Church. I just thought it was really neat that this even existed on the church's website. And it was kind of fun. Like, I don't know. All right. So what I am going to talk about today is a story that most of us think that we know. Okay. I'm going to say most of it. I am one of those people. When I decided to first do the story about the Amityville Horror House, which is the story I'm doing today, I honestly did not know what I was getting into. So first of all, I swore that we had done this story. We talked about this just the
other
day.
I'm so convinced we've talked about this story,
right? Double check, triple check.
And then I go back and we haven't talked about them, so.
Like, we must have just been having a drink and we talked about it for an hour amongst ourselves. Anyway, then I was researching it. I realized there's a reason we've mm-hmm. never done this story. I think I had thought about doing it. And then I was like, oh, my gosh, it's so twisted. And there are so many revisions to the story over the years. So I knew why we hadn't done this story. So, but the two major storylines of this house are both worth telling. They're both really wonky. And so I'll try my best to do them justice because they do go together, but it's there. Yeah. There's a reason the house existed that we know of in the first place. You know, there's a reason. So I'm going to start with a story that literally put this house on the map in the first place. The only reason it became known, and I am talking about the first little story. I'm talking about the DeFeo murders committed by Ronald or Butch DeFeo Jr. He was 23. He was the eldest of five kids. So I'm going to get into that first, and then I will talk about what we know of the house from the movies. Right. Okay. So here we go. All right. So the murders. Around 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 13th, 1974, 23-year-old DeFeo entered a bar in Amityville, Long Island, New York, and declared, "You gotta help me. I think my mother and father are shot." Right. That's immediate. Like, what? Red flag. I know. So DeFeo and a small group of people went back to the house on 112 Ocean Avenue, which was located not too far away from the bar, and they found DeFeo's parents dead inside. One of the group, DeFeo's friend Joe, made an emergency call to the police department, and they searched the house and found that six members of the same family were dead in their beds. Six. So the victims were Ron Jr.'s parents, Ronald DeFeo Sr., who was 44, my age. This is crazy. I'm glad I have littles. Louise DeFeo, 42, and his four siblings, Don, 18, Allison, 13, Mark, 12, and John Matthew, 9. They were very Catholic. All of the victims had been shot with a 35 caliber, lever action Marlin. So a 35 Marlin rifle. It's a rifle. Around 3 o'clock in the morning of that day. So from 3 to say 6 p.m.
He didn't know what to do, or he didn't know they were dead.
All right. So. So the DeFeo parents had been shot twice, while the children had all been killed with single shots. Physical evidence suggests that Louise DeFeo and her daughter Allison were both awake at the time of their deaths. According to Suffolk police, the victims were all found lying face down in bed. Forensics had found that they had not been moved, so where they were was exactly where they were. They were shot in that position, in that exact kind of thing, right? But all of them were face down. Crazy. The DeFeo family had occupied 112 Ocean Avenue since purchasing it in 1965. The six victims were later buried nearby St. Charles Cemetery in Farmingdale. So he was known as Butch, and so he was the eldest of the family and the lone surviving member. And the story never really is going in his favor. He was the only person alive out of six people. He immediately was taken to the local police station, honestly, for his own protection. because they weren't sure. He was saying they came in and they killed them all. They killed them all.
Who's they? Like, he was there when it happened and they didn't kill him is what he was saying?
So his grandfather and his... I think both of his grandfathers were actually involved with the mafia. Therefore, his dad was probably involved with the mafia, and they had a lot of money. He didn't have to work for the money, but he came from a really violent family, and if he, in later interviews, discussed his family life, and he would say, "I was beaten up from the day I was born. Like, I was a baby." And, you know, he testified in court that at 18 months old, his dad threw him up against the wall. And, like, all of the children were treated this way. And the mom also was treated this way. And there was just a lot of yelling. Neighbors always said there was always yelling going on at the house. And so for DeFeo Jr., for him to be like, mm-hmm. We could have gotten away with it, you know, if it was just him, you know, that whole thing. But like there was no love in that family. There was like no one had any loving feelings. And his mom was a mom until the kids was like a sweet mom, caring, loving, take care of the baby mom until the kid was old enough. And then it was like, okay, now let me have another baby. And so there was always this, like, there was five kids. Anyway, so he was taken to the local police for his protection. And that was because of him saying that they're mafia people by a hitman. There was a hitman named Louis Fellini. However, an interview at the station soon exposed all the inconsistencies. And this is a man who was doing drugs for weeks before the murders. He was doing heroin every single day. He had money to burn. His friends weren't really paying that much attention to him anymore because he was just out of control. He was drinking a fifth of scotch every day. And he was just not himself. Like, there was nothing good happening for this man. He just had money because he didn't have to work. His parents had money and he just was in the house. But he was, as soon as he got to the police station, he fell asleep in the room. Like, they gave him a room with a cot. And so he fell asleep right away. And so while he was sleeping, people were coming in and saying, "Oh, there's a gun, and he knows how to use a gun." He would brag about being able to use the gun, and so they soon wrapped this all up. They couldn't find any of the shell casings, so they wrapped it up. They're like, "Look, we already know. We just go ahead and just admit to what happened." So the following day, he confessed to carrying out the killings himself. And Fellini, the alleged hitman, had an alibi, proving he was out of state at the time of the killing. So DeFeo, the survivor, told detectives, "Once I started, I just couldn't stop. It went so fast." He admitted that he had taken a bath and redressed and detailed where he had discarded crucial evidence, such as bloodstained clothes and the rifle and cartridges before going to work as usual.
He just couldn't stop.
So there's pictures of where they found the clothes, and he just couldn't stop. One of the things, as I watched like documentaries and just really learned a lot about this particular crime, was that no neighbor heard a shotgun go off. Yeah. 6, 7, 8 times. Wow.
But they heard arguing every day.
Not one.
They didn't hear a shotgun go off 7 times.
No one. Boom. Boom. Nobody heard it. Everybody was still in bed, and only one, maybe two of them were awake at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no house is that big. to have a rifle go off.
Personally, if I hear rifles going on in another room, like I'm, I don't know, I'm not going to be still in my bed. Yeah.
Face down. But I mean, that's, and that's the other thing that you have to really think about, I guess, like what is the response to fear? But all of them had the same response to fear. There was no real sign of struggle. There was no bruising. There was no, it was just like they were asleep. And the two little boys, the youngest boys, were in a room together. I don't know. Together. I just
assumed like kids would hear that and get scared and not like stay in their beds. They would hide under the bed or get in their closet. You know what I mean? Like try to hide.
Each parent was shot twice.
Yeah.
They were in the same room as one another. Why didn't the mom get up and run?
I don't know.
The dad was shot first. The mom, what? Like, that first gunshot would have had me, I don't know, up on the ceiling.
I mean, if you thought you were going to die anyways, like, why not try to at least save your other kids? You know? I don't know.
I mean, so their fight or flight didn't exist.
And I don't know what I would do in that situation, but I just don't feel like I would just roll over and let someone shoot me in the head.
It's very weird. It's very weird. That was probably that's probably one of the single most disturbing things for me about all of the, I mean, aside from the six people that are dead, but how does that, that's just, to me, that's really weird. And if for like, you don't believe anything else that comes after this, what, I would love an explanation as to, is there a cat meowing right outside my door? It's like a child like, poor Louie got fixed today. Got his little chip. All right. So controversies. And this is what we were talking about. All six victims were found face down in their beds with no sign of struggle. So the police investigation concluded that the rifle had not been fitted with a silencer. And had found no evidence of drugs, sedatives, or anything. That was my other, like, oh, they must have been drugged. They must have gotten something. Nothing in their system that kept them so weirdly positioned. Neighbors did not report any shots being fired. What? And those who were awake at the time of the murders simply heard the family's sheepdog, Shaggy, barking.
Did he kill the dog?
That's it.
Oh, good.
Huh? He did not kill the dog.
That's what I care about.
That's what you care about. I know. So, the dog. DeFeo had a volatile relationship with his father, but the motive for the killings remains unclear. Again, his story has changed many times over the years. He asked police what he had to do in order to collect on his father's life insurance. He was a drug addict, which prompted the prosecution to suggest that at trial, that his motive was to collect on the life insurance policies of his parents. But, you know, friends had been interviewed, and there's interviews on the internet. You can find it on YouTube. There's a documentary called Shattered Hopes. There's all these things. People will say that any one of those kids could have grown up to kill their dad. Anyone, and mother. Like, because, you know, as a child, you're not seeing your mother as a victim as well. You know, you're seeing her complicit in your beating.
Well, especially if she's not being motherly
it's very,
figure to you.
It's very twisted.
Yeah.
Either, right. Like, that stopped. There was one right before the incident happened. DeFeo claims that his dad broke a pool stick over his head and that his mother cheered him on. There were just lots of those little kinds of stories that pop up. And as a juror, one of the jurors was interviewed, and she's like, you know, as horrible as the crimes were, this is obviously a very abused person. who just grew up with nothing but abuse. And so there was some traumatic brain injury issues going on, spinal issues mm-hmm. because of the throwing up against the wall and things like that. So he was never healthy growing. He didn't stand a chance. So if you're taking anything away from that, like if he did kill them all, anyway. So since his conviction, he did get 25 years to life for the murders. He has been denied parole and any kind of leniency since 1976. And so mm-hmm. he's still there with the thickest beard I've ever seen in my life. Like super, his hair super close together. Like it's weird. So since the conviction, DeFeo has given several varying accounts of how the killings were carried out. One of the things that is really creepy that he tried to say was that he mm-hmm. was super high mm-hmm. because he was doing heroin, and he was in his living room, and a woman mm-hmm. dressed in all black in this jacket with black gloves
not what heroin
handed
does,
him a
okay.
rifle to go. So, later, a neighbor said that he saw Dawn, his mm-hmm. younger 18-year-old sister, dressed like that, get into a car with a rifle.
A neighbor said that?
And drive away.
But wasn't she shot?
Yes. This wow. is that day.
Okay. This is so weird.
So it's so weird. So he claimed his sister Dawn killed. So this is why I'm saying, like, what I really needed was like a whiteboard yes. with like the red string to put all of these different stories
yeah,
together.
Yeah. So he says he did heroin in a dress, handed him right? a gun. A neighbor said he saw the same. Yeah.
With a jacket.
And a neighbor says
a
he saw the same
kind
type of figure earlier in the day, or after the shootings.
Like
gotcha. Okay.
after the shootings would have taken place, and that gotcha. They went and drove the direction okay. of where the gotcha. Rifle would have been found later. Because okay, so he claimed that sister Dawn killed their father and then took their distraught mother and killed all of his siblings before he. Before he killed Dawn. So it was all very weird. Now, in, let's see, 31 years after, so that would make that 2007. I don't do math. So 31 years after the event, he did an interview, but he did an interview for mm-hmm. bio. So was that biography? And it was with a psychiatrist. And so it was like, I'm not here as your psychiatrist. You know that this is going to be publicized. So tell me what happened that night. And so he says that they were like fighting about like dad.
Like him and his sister were fighting.
Go, right. Okay. Like it was this. Yeah. Uh-huh. Kind of like, oh, you want to go kill him? Why don't you go kill him? I'll go get you the gun. If you want to kill him, I'll go get you the gun. So he grabs the gun. He's like, come on, let's go. Let's go kill him. Like, let's do this. And then he's like, hey, Fatso, wake up. And then he's like, go ahead, kill him. There he is right there. But his dad started to wake up, and he's the one holding the gun. So he freaks out, and he shoots dad. Well, at that point, twice. At that point, mom is waking up, and mom has a .38 caliber pistol in her bedside table. So he's like, well, shit, I don't want to die. And so he shoots mm-hmm. her twice. So he gets all flummoxed, and he goes and he gets into the car, and he's just driving around and driving around.
I could kind of see the story around. Of killing the parents on drugs, like if you're hallucinating, but not killing every other sibling in the house, too.
So then he says he came home. And he goes in and he finds the other kids mm-hmm. dead. And so he goes into Dawn's room and just out of anger kills her.
But does at any point he explain why they were all face
and
down?
That's,
Okay. Just thought I'd ask.
No, has ever said why they were all face down. The forensics show that they are exactly where they were when they were shot. That's there so was funny. No movement of the bodies. There's the movement of the, you know, the bullet through in and out, all that. Okay. So it's really crazy. And this is the reason why, like, this story was so frustrating is because, like, every so often this man gets back on camera and tells a different version of the story. And he's like, look, I was just trying to be crazy. I was going for the insanity defense. I'm like, I don't think you needed to lie. He goes, it would have just been just as easy for me to just say, yeah, I did it. He's like, but that's not really what happened. It's like, but you did say that. It was so frustrating to listen to him. It's like, but you know, like traumatic brain injury is a bitch, you know, like who knows what was really going on. Anyway, his grandfather wouldn't hear any of his BS, was like, he did it. This guy's a punk. He is a mess. He's a drug addict. And he did blah, 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 blah. Just put him in jail and I don't want to hear about it. The judge didn't believe any of these revisions. He's never believed that his sister Dawn had anything to do with it. Dawn was one of the ones that was most hurt. Like her whole head just was just not really around anymore. Very angry on that one. There was questions about, like, was there some kind of incestual relationship going on? They were all, it was a very unhealthy family. I just keep getting more and
more questions about the story. Very unhealthy.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I could just do the whole hour on this, but I just, you know, I know. So, he tried in 1990 to have his conviction vacated. In support of this motion, DeFeo asserted that Don and an unknown assailant who fled the house before he could get a look at him killed their parents. I mean, so see, he killed their parents and Don subsequently killed their siblings. Right. It's just so much. Nobody believes him. He said that the only person he killed was Don and that it was by accident as they struggled over the rifle. Again, I thought she took the rifle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how many times? Like, anyway. He asserted he was married to Geraldine and that her brother was with him at the time of the murders. Geraldine Gates. He was living in New Jersey. They were living in New Jersey. He was dating her, but he said he was married to her. Anyway, again, this is another one of those little strings that if you pull on it long enough, it comes totally unraveled. An affidavit from Richard Romando was submitted to the court, and it was asserted that he could not be located to testify in person. Evidence was submitted to the court by the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office suggesting that Richard Romando did not exist and that Geraldine Gates was living in upstate New York, married to someone else at the time of the murders. So Geraldine Gates did not testify at this hearing because the authorities had already confronted her about the false claims and in 1992 secured a statement under oath where she admitted Romando was fictitious and that she did not actually marry DeFeo until 1989 in anticipation of the filing of the 440 motion. So even now, even in 1990, that man was still 30. Was that? Oh my God, was that 30 years ago? the judge says, I find the testimony of the defendant overall to be false and fabricated. His testimony that during the fall of 1974, he was married and lived with his wife and child is incredible and not worthy of belief. He produced no corroborating evidence in this regard. Another reason for my disbelief of defendant's testimony is demonstrated by consideration of several photos of the trial testimony. He signed all kinds of things. Anyway, he was just a liar, liar, pants on fire. He'd get a lot of Pinocchios.
You would think with all the time in jail, he'd come up with a better story.
You think. But again, you know, traumatic brain injury. I don't know. So, okay, here we go. So on November 30th, 2000, Ron DeFeo, Butch Jr., whatever, met with Rick Osuna, the author of The Night the DeFeos Died, which was published in 2002. And I really need to get on with the story. Anyway, according to Osuna, they spoke for about 6 hours. However, a letter to the radio show host Lou Gentile, DeFeo Jr. denied giving Rick Osuna information that could be used in his book. One of the things was police found traces of unburned gunpowder on Dawn's nightgown, which DeFeo proponents allege proves she did discharge a firearm because she wouldn't have the gunpowder on her nightgown.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true, but there you go. However, at trial, the ballistics expert Alfred Della Penna, who also says homicide, testified testified that unburned gunpowder is discharged through the muzzle of the weapon, indicating that she was in proximity of the muzzle of the weapon when it was discharged, not that she fired the weapon. Okay, so all of this is to say, there is a docudrama titled Shattered Hopes. It's about the Amityville murders, and I think you can get it on Vimeo for a fee. So now a lot of that story seems to change so often. There's never a consistent narrative. So I there's so much to it that I just kind of have to give up, throw my hands up. Okay. My brain got confused. I need a big whiteboard. Okay. So, but we're supposed to be doing creepy Halloween stuff. So let's get to the good stuff. So in December 75, after the home on 112 Ocean Avenue lay vacant for 13 months because of that grisly scene, George and Kathy Lutz and their three children moved into the house. They had spoken to the children about the history of the house before they bought it. They heard about it. They said, okay, people might make fun of you. There might be stories. And they're like, no, that's fine. So they all agreed as a family and they moved in.
Not be fine with me.
But after that is a, that yes. But after 28 days, the Lutzes left the house claiming to have been terrorized by paranormal phenomenon while living there. So, George and Kathy Lutz believed that they purchased this dream home, 4,000 square foot house, three stories. Had a boat dock. There was a pool. It was just gorgeous. It was like right on the wall. I mean, just beautiful house, right? Mm-hmm. They had, after all, looked at 80 homes up until this point. They found this beauty for $80,000, which at that time, it probably would have been worth more like $150,000 in 1976. But now it's like more like $1.5 million. Right. Yeah. It's probably worth more, but it's the Amityville house. I don't know. So much of the DeFeo's furniture was still in the house because was included.
No. Oh, my God. No.
It was included for $400 as part of the deal. A friend of George Lutz learned of the history of the house and insisted on having it blessed. At the time, George was a non-practicing Methodist and had no experience of what this would entail. And Kathy was a non-practicing Catholic and explained the process. So George knew a Catholic priest named Father Ray who agreed to carry out the house blessing. He went to the house right when they moved in, like the first day, went into the sewing room, which is what was known as the sewing room, and was immediately, he flicked the holy water and began to pray. He says he was slapped. He felt someone slap him like a bitch.
Where is Kevin?
Someone slapped him. And then, I know, where is Kevin? God damn. So, and then a voice demanded that he get out. God. So this is a little bit like in the movie. So when he was leaving the house, he was like, oh, bye. And he just like peaced out. He was like, this is too scary. And he just was really frightened. later, when he got home, his hands began to blister in the, like, stigmata spots. Like, the stigmata spots. He went to the doctor, and his doctor was like, I think that's probably stress-related. Have you ever blistered on both sides of your hands due to stress?
A hole that you're bleeding from both hands, but don't worry about it. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Totally fine.
Huge blisters, right? But they were on both sides like a stigmata, right? Okay, so they called it fever blisters, whatever. So he tried to call the house. He tried to say, you know, he wanted to call the house to warn them, nobody in your house should occupy that room. But they called, and this is in the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Hello, hello, father? Father, are you there? You know, anyway. At first, George and Kathy experienced nothing unusual, but George said in an interview that they practiced transcendental meditation. And in their, I don't really know what that means. So in their transcendental meditating session, she felt something sort of caress her hand. Kathy did. And that was like within that first couple of days. George also said, and that which was not alarming, but on the day that they moved in, he says that their dog tried to hang itself.
Oh my God.
By running headlong for a gate and jumped over the gate, and its leash hung him.
Oh my God. That would be enough for me to just peace out.
That's cool. They were like, that's weird. You know, in retrospect, they saw that. Like, but in first retrospect? They were like, oh my gosh, he's so excited. They're like, oh, he's really excited. He didn't catch the whole thing. Anyway, so, but every person in the house had different experiences. And Kathy said it was like we were each, quote, each living God. In a different house.
Mm-mm, no, thanks.
Which is like The Conjuring. Like, not all of them were experiencing what the mom was experiencing, right? By mid-January, after another attempt at a house blessing, George and Kathy, they experienced what would turn out to be their final night in the house. The Lutzes declined to give a full account of the events, like, after that, describing them as too frightening. But what George said, it was like, later in an interview, was that it was like 100 people were in the house all... tuning their instruments, and there were doors opening and closing. Boom, 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 boom.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Right?
No.
Their dog would get up, get sick, and then lie back down and go back to sleep. Like, there was just all these crazy things happening, right? So after getting in touch with the priest that did the blessing, the Lutzes decided to take home belongings and stay at Kathy's mother's house until they sorted out the problems with the house. And they claimed that the phenomenon followed them there, with the final scene of Anson's book describing, quote, greenish black slime coming up the staircase towards them.
My God.
On January 14th, 1976, George and Kathy Lutz, with their three children and their dog Harry, left 112 Ocean Avenue, leaving all of their possessions behind. I think they might have had just the clothes on their back. The next day, a mover arrived to remove everything, but there was no paranormal phenomenon going on at that time. So some of the things that they experienced, I'm going to share my screen here because I know you have seen this.
I have not seen that, and I wish I had never seen that. Thanks.
So the photo was allegedly taken inside the home on March 6th, 1976. So this is right after the Lutzes left. And there was a team of investigators, including Ed and Lorraine Warren, who were in the house, along with some others. And they had a stationary camera set up and where this facing this direction, and every so often it would just go off, and it was a black and white camera, and you could see people kind of walking through sometimes and standing in that same place. Every so often they had a bunch of different pictures. And then in one of them, this picture came out. There were no children in the house at the time the picture was taken. It's probably the best known, it's probably the most famous paranormal photo around. I'll stop sharing it so you don't have to look at that poor boy. I know, it's very scary. I don't like little kids. All right. Little dead kids. I don't like them. Okay. So it's kind of a very clearly, yeah. It's like a clear, you could see that it's a boy. Some think that it is the little boy of John DeFeo. When that picture was shown to the youngest Lutz, she said, "Oh, that's Jody. That's the little boy that I played with. That's my friend who I'd play with. He would sometimes present himself as a pig, or like a baby pig, a big pig or a baby pig, or this little boy." Okay. And so she had this imaginary friend. And so they were like, "Oh, he's just this imaginary friend." But that is the picture.
He presents himself as a baby pig.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she really liked pigs at that time. And so he was trying to be fun and play with her.
I don't know.
So this photo was first revealed on the Merv Griffin Show in 1979. So that's a pretty interesting picture. So Ed and Lorraine Warren had a rosary with them when they went to see the house. And Lorraine was adamant. Once she stepped out of the car, she was like, "Oh, no. There are lots of non-human entities up in this place." Mm-hmm. And she had a rosary that was... that was blessed by Padre Pio, who I spoke of earlier, and somebody who was very important because of the life of saintlihood that this man lived, and they really, really connected with him. And there's a picture of, and I'll have to find it for you to send it to you, but there's like a picture of a moose that is hanging in the living room, and you can see Ed and Lorraine Warren and some of the other mm-hmm. investigators in the house. And on the moose's antler, is that an ear? Is it an ear? Just antler. Anyway, there is it looks like the profile of Padre Pio on the freaking moose. And I was like, yeah, it does kind of look like a picture of this guy. It could have been.
Your story is stressing me out.
I know. I'm sorry. I told you to light that protection candle. Anyway, so here are some of the other things that went on in the house. And I know this is going to be a really long story, you guys. I'm really sorry. All right. So green slime purportedly oozing from the walls and the doorknobs and the keyholes. That's fun. The water turning black in like toilets and sinks, and that's fun. Eyes peering into the house from the outside. Foul odors. I just think they had a plumbing problem. Kathy allegedly levitating in bed. George claimed that he woke up like in the movie at 3:15 in the morning every night, which is the exact time of death of the DeFeo family members. Mm-hmm. That's really just, I think that's where our 3 o'clock, the witching hour, comes from.
Yeah, 3 o'clock is the witching hour.
So Jay Anson wrote the book in 1977 called The Amityville Horror, and it was based on these reported events, and then made the 79 film. And then in 2005, there was the remake of that. The book became a bestseller. Anson's book used 45 hours of the family's recorded interviews as the basis. It is still based on a true story. It is not 100% factual. The family will tell you that. One of the three Lutz children, Christopher Quarantino, that's what how it's spelled, confirmed that the hauntings happened. However, he also said that the events were greatly exaggerated by George Lutz because money. George was curious about paranormal activity and actively tried to summon spirits.
Was he white?
He was white, dude. He was white.
Of course.
But had a financial motivation to sell his story to the media due to the family's severe debt because, well, they left a house that they just bought and they owed all that money on it. Mm-hmm. Weber, DeFeo Jr.'s attorney, said the haunting was all a hoax, which he purportedly conjured up with Anson while drinking. So, DeFeo's attorney...
Who said that?
DeFeo's attorney and the Lutzes got together and over drinks went over... That's what he's saying, is that they went over stuff and fabricated the whole thing to sell to the media. Very crazy.
Wow.
There was a vampirologist. I didn't know that was a thing involved. I don't know. All kinds.
That's the kind of job I want.
I want to be a vampirologist. I don't know. So the book was a novel. All right. It wasn't like a nonfiction, you know, kind of work. But but because it claimed to have been inspired by true events, many just took it as nonfiction. And that's it. Like, it's true, right? People were fascinated.
Can you listen?
Huh?
Can you listen to the real interview somewhere? Like the real interviews of the family?
Oh, yeah, all over. I listened to them all. And let me tell you something. Be in a quiet place because Kathy Letts talks like this. And
oh my God.
We had all kinds of things happen. One interviewer was like, "You're going to have to speak up, ma'am." And then she goes, "I'm sorry." So the... I was like, oh my God,
I can't be that quiet if I try.
They are both so soft spoken. They have no there's no movement to their voices. There's no vocal variety. They don't use, there's no hand gestures, and they're like in front of a live studio audience and everybody has to kind of like, I can't hear you, you know, like it's crazy. It's crazy how quiet, how quietly she spoke. It was very, it kind of freaked me out. I mean, it's very weird. But there's a lot of, like, even later after Kathy dies, George did a little documentary going through photos from the night that Ed and Lorraine Warren were there, saying like, oh, this is the piece that we've tried to get rid of and it kept showing up in the house. We'd throw it away and it would show back up and it would move from room to room. He's like, oh, this guy says he was never in the house. Well, here's a picture of him in the house. And, you know, just things like that. So you can tell he's a little bitter about some of the stuff that people say, you know, they try to distance themselves from him. Okay, so whatever version of the Amityville that you believe, like something went down. It might not have been. And even the son, Christopher, will say like, was I scared? Yeah, sometimes I was scared. Was it as bad as all that? No. And so he wanted to even come up with his own little like movie about like what really happened as far as he's concerned. And even George Lutz would say, I'm not speaking for my kids. They're grown ups. Like they can speak for themselves. But there is like, there is something that happened there. Like it wasn't a stress-free environment. But you know, for some, they believe that it was George Lutz's fault and others believe that it was, part of what the DeFeo, family experienced. And some have even said that the house sits on the burial ground of, a chief,
I just don't see how six humans could be murdered in a house so violently and the house not have bad negative energy in it, you know?
Oh, yes. Oh, and so the other thing that I totally forgot was that in the room that the boys died in, was the room that the priest was in, right? So that's the room she was like, nobody should stay in that room. That should just be like a whatever room. That should not be a bedroom. But that was the boys' room, and there were always like hundreds of flies, and they would spray them down in the dead of winter. They'd spray them down, kill them, and they'd be 100 more flies in there. And so in the movie, the priest gets like attacked with flies, but it wasn't like that. It was like four or five flies. That's something, you know, like whatever. But it was like hundreds of flies. So yeah, again, there's just, who do you talk to? Who do you believe? There are all kinds of documentaries. Yeah. And really, it's just, if you watch one and you believe that, then like everything else is going to seem kind of crazy. But if you listen to somebody else who, you know, the detectives or the reporters, and there's one reporter who was there with some of the other investigators who saw like someone levitate, yeah, and, you know, like someone almost like was having like a heart issue all of a sudden. Like there was some severe, Ed and Lorraine Warren say, man, that lots of stuff was going on in that house.
See, now I would like, believe
that
her.
House was off the chain for sure with stuff. She was like, woo. Yeah,
the house was off the chain.
Like, that house had a lot going on for it. Would I visit it? No. Other owners had lived there. Some people had experiences that were bad for their family, where George Lutz would say, well, they didn't experience it like we did. They have it a different way. But, mm-hmm, you know, families go into bankruptcy, families get divorced, families get sick. One of the things about Kathy Lutz was that she had visions of herself as an older woman when she'd look in the mirror. And when she died, she had a respiratory disease or lung issue that it just aged her. Mm-hmm. And she said, like, right before she died, she was like, that's who I saw in the mirror. Like, this is who I'm seeing. Like, it just aged her to the point of what, like, that's who I saw in the mirror every day, you know, that she would see herself. Mm-hmm. Very scary stuff. Regardless if you believe it or not, right now, I don't want to look up because I remember your little creepypasta shit from last week. And it's like, yeah, look for the monsters. Just don't look up. She doesn't like to be looked at. I'm not looking up. But there's like, it's had me all like eebie-jeebied all day. You know, so if Anderson comes in here like he did the other night and says, Olivia keeps knocking on my door. And I tell her, I say, yes, yes, come in. And she doesn't come in. And then
I don't say come in. That's a horrible thing to say to spirits.
He opens the door and he goes to her room and he's like, what? What did you want? Why were you knocking on my door? And she's like, I wasn't knocking on your door. And he gets,
oh, well, I'm never coming to your house again.
I'm like, well, she's just lying to you, honey. He's like, I don't like it when she lies. And I'm just like, I am scared out of my mind. Don't be creepy, kid. Don't be creepy. So burn that protection candle. Everyone at home, do your little whatever's.
Do you want to? Are you doing your story with the question of the week answers?
God.
Okay. Well, after that, and I have to walk through a dark. I have to go down an elevator by myself.
I ruin your day.
I ruin your building. And walk through a dark parking lot to get to my car before going home.
Do you want to call me on the phone and talk to me on the phone while you're? Oh.
No, I don't. I don't want to hear any more creepy children screaming in the background.
I got
while
some
I'm
creepy pastas.
That's
nope. Okay.
No, I'm good. I'm gonna read the question of the week answers. Glenn says, I forgot to put my mask on last night and other stuff you should know.
Glenn, that's perfect for you. Oh my god.
Leanne says, okay, a slice of American life. Joshua says, heading home now, a new theory of relativity.
That's so good. That's so good.
Sarah is, oh my God, like you've never heard it before, which is like perfect, I think, for her.
You guys, this is so good.
These are all perfect. I really am a big fan of this next one. Elizabeth says, no, lobsters, a new theory of relativity. That's my favorite. Ashley says, I don't know. I refuse to acknowledge it. So she told me a brilliant new perspective. Shauna says, this is awesome. A critical look at the English language.
Yes! That's my favorite one. Oh, my God. I love that.
Lori says, nice boat, a message from extraterrestrials. Amy says, okay, honey, a new theory in relativity. Austin says, just got notification of report being completed. I will review later this evening. Let me know what time you're available. Time to review Unpacking the Truth.
That's like mine.
That's another long one for you. Hillary says, listen to some jams and other stuff you should know.
That's perfect.
Oh my God, that's a good one too. Chantel says, oh man, it is so good. A message from extraterrestrials.
I did not ask for the anal probe. Oh man, it is so good.
Another Sarah says, good to know you voted like you've never heard it before. David says, yes, one of the reasons I wanted Warren. She was the most serious about trust busting, unpacking the truth. And then Shelby says, I was just getting to read a message from extraterrestrials.
I was just getting to reading
these a are message good. From
extraterrestrials. Really funny. Oh my gosh, those are so good. Y'all never disappoint. Y'all never disappoint.
Thank you to everyone who answered. We love it. Oh my gosh.
So we have only what? Is it one more week? Is next week? Next week?
I think next week is the Halloween week. So no pressure.
Bring it. We will be right here with you again next Thursday. If you have a question of the week idea or a spooky story idea or just want to chit chat with us about whatever, you know, we're here for you.
I don't know if you guys saw the story I posted last week about the woman who called off her wedding with a ghost. But if any of you are married to it, we would like to hear from you. Yes. I don't know about Kat, but I would like to know how that works.
I would like to know. Is it an open relationship? One of the NXIVM members, update on a story I did, and one of the NXIVM members was charged and was sentenced. Claire Bromfman, one of the daughters of the Seagram's fortune, Seagram's heir. She was still a Keith Raniere devoted follower, even to the bitter end. And they were like, please just say you don't follow him anymore. And she wouldn't do it. So really, really crazy. Yeah. So Keith Raniere should be sentenced this month. If not already, I don't know. It's not in the news yet. But I will keep you guys posted on that craziness. We're here next week. If you have any ideas, shoot them our way. And until then, be safe walking to your car down a dark hallway in an elevator all by yourself. Call somebody. Just call somebody. Call your girl. Call somebody. But all of you be safe and be kind to one another. And we'll see you next week. Bye! Bye.